Good morning. My name is Jessa, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Calfrac Well Services Limited Third Quarter 2018 Earnings Release and Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Fernando Aguilar, President and Chief Executive Officer, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Jessa. Good morning, and welcome to our discussion of Calfrac Well Services third quarter results. Joining me on the call today are Mike Olinek, Calfrac's Chief Financial Officer, and Scott Treadwell, our Vice President of Capital Markets and Strategy. This morning's conference call will be conducted as follows: I will provide a summary of the quarter, after which Mike will provide an overview of the financial performance of the company. I will then close the presentation with an outlook for Calfrac's business. After the presentation, we will open the call to questions. In a news release earlier today, Calfrac reported its third quarter 2018 results. Please note that these financial figures are in Canadian dollars unless otherwise indicated. Some of our comments today will refer to non-IFRS financial measures, such as adjusted EBITDA and operating income. Please see our news release for additional disclosure on these financial measures. Our comments today will also include forward-looking statements regarding Calfrac's future results and prospects. We caution you that these forward-looking statements are subject to a number of unknown and known risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to differ materially from our expectations. Please see our news release and other regulatory filings for more information on forward-looking statements and these risk factors. As shown in our results this morning, Calfrac's strong performance in the third quarter is further proof that our business model of partnering with strong, efficient clients and delivering safe, effective, and productive service is a recipe for consistent success in our industry. In particular, our operations in the United States and Argentina deserve a special mention for delivering operational and financial results well above our expectations entering the quarter. On behalf of the board and the senior management team, I would like to thank everyone at Calfrac and their families for delivering another quarter of good results for our company. Globally, commodity prices continued to improve through the third quarter, although infrastructure issues impacted realized pricing in Canada and in the Permian Basin. As we look ahead to 2019, we believe improved cash flow for many of our clients, especially in the United States, sets the stage for a strong year and a reemergence of a tighter fracturing market as the year progresses. Third quarter activity levels were better than expected in the United States and Argentina, while weather in September impacted Canadian activity levels and a shift in operational footprint impacted results in Russia. As the third quarter progressed, we began to see instances of pricing well below market fundamentals in the Canadian division. While spot market pricing can and should vary over a short period, the emergence of material discounts for long-term work in the Canadian Basin sets a troubling precedent. Our mandate at Calfrac is to manage our asset base for the long-term benefit of our investors, not to chase transactional market share with undisciplined and unsophisticated pricing strategies. We will continue to evaluate both of our active fleet and the relative disposition of that fleet globally and make adjustments with a view to fulfilling that mandate. Now, I will pass the call over to Mike, who will present an overview of our quarterly financial performance.
Thank you, Fernando, and thank you everyone for joining us for today's call. I'm pleased to report that in addition to the strong operational results announced this morning, the company generated over $24 million in free cash flow during the third quarter and began reducing its debt load by repaying $20 million on its revolving credit facility. Free cash flow generation remains a key point of focus for the company going forward, and I look forward to further debt reduction in 2019. Consolidated revenue in the third quarter increased by 41% year-over-year, primarily due to an 85% increase in revenue in the company's United States division that was driven by job mix and a larger active fleet. Adjusted EBITDA reported for the quarter was $111.6 million compared to $81.1 million a year ago. Operating income was up 47% to $115.3 million from $78.2 million in 2017. These improved results were driven mainly by a larger active fleet in the United States, as well as material improvements in utilization in Argentina. In Canada, third quarter revenue was up 2% from the same quarter in 2017, as a modest improvement in pricing was offset by a slightly lower job count. Weather delays in September impacted total utilization and revenue, despite a larger active fleet operating in Canada during the quarter. In addition, the number of coiled tubing jobs increased by 12% from the third quarter in 2017, primarily due to the company activating two additional large coiled tubing units from the United States. Revenue per coiled tubing job was consistent with the same period in 2017. Operating income of $27.6 million fell 38% from 2017, primarily due to the exceptional utilization seen in the third quarter of 2017. Lost revenue due to weather delays in excess of $10 million was magnified by a larger fixed cost base relative to 2017. In the United States, the company began operations with its 17th fleet during the quarter and was more successful than anticipated in winning work for the three previously disclosed fleets that were expected to experience significant idle time during the quarter. With 41% more equipment in the field than in 2017, coupled with better utilization and more contribution from larger job types, revenue in the United States increased by 85% to $359.3 million. Fracturing job count in the United States was up 23%, while fracturing revenue per job increased by 52%, driven primarily by the growth of operations in Texas, which have larger average job sizes, as well as a 4% improvement in the value of the U.S. dollar. The company's United States operations generated operating income of $88.5 million during the third quarter of 2018, compared to $37.1 million in the same period in 2017. The improved profitability was driven by higher utilization and pricing, as well as better fixed cost absorption and foreign exchange impacts. The company booked no reactivation costs in the third quarter of this year, compared to $8 million in the same period in 2017. Revenue from Calfrac's Russian operations of $25.7 million was 14% lower than the $29.8 million recorded in the corresponding period of 2017. The decrease in revenue was primarily due to a shift in activity away from the larger job sizes in Usinsk, offset somewhat by higher activity in Hantimansisk. Coil tubing job count was 29% lower than the prior year due to specific customer program delays. The decrease in activity and revenue in the company's Russian division resulted in operating income of $1.6 million, a 67% drop compared to the prior year. The closure of operations in Usinsk and a 6% depreciation of the Russian ruble were the largest drivers of this change. Calfrac's Argentinian operations generated total revenue of $61.1 million during the third quarter of 2018, an increase of 40% from the prior year. The revenue increase was mainly due to higher work volumes across the division, but particularly in the Vaca Muerta shale play. The company's operations in Argentina reported operating income of $9.4 million, compared to a small loss in the third quarter of 2017. Improved utilization and cost control at all levels were the main drivers of the improved profitability. The company's corporate division recorded total cost of $11.8 million during the third quarter, an increase of $3.8 million from the prior year. Higher personnel costs were the main contributor to this increase. The company recorded interest costs of $21.8 million during the quarter versus $21.1 million in 2017. The increase was due to the change in the makeup of the company's debt load after the comprehensive refinancing transactions that were undertaken in the second quarter of 2018. During the quarter, Calfrac completed the purchase of the minority interest in the company's Argentine division. Additionally, the company made the determination that the U.S. dollar was the functional currency in that country, as substantially all of the company's revenue and a large portion of expenses are either denominated in dollars or indexed to the U.S. dollar exchange rate. These changes were largely responsible for the $8.2 million loss on foreign exchange items during the quarter. Going forward, we expect that only movements in the U.S. dollar will materially impact the company's reported net income. CalPREC's Board of Directors has approved an increase to the company's 2018 capital budget of $13 million, for a total of $168 million for the year. The increase in spending will ensure sufficient support for the company's operations as 2019 begins. With a $20 million reduction in borrowings during the third quarter, CalPREC took the first step toward our goal of lowering the company's total debt level to 2 to 2.5 times mid-cycle EBITDA, which we believe is approximated by the range covered by current 2018 and 2019 estimates. We would then seek to grow our cash balance, which would allow the company to execute on accretive transactions during industry down cycles. The majority of CalPREC's historical growth has followed this strategy, and we aim to position the company to resume this approach in the years ahead. To summarize the balance sheet, the company had working capital of $386.8 million at September 30th, which included approximately $17.5 million of cash. In addition, CalPREC had used $0.8 million of its credit facilities for letters of credit and had borrowings of $195 million on its credit facilities, leaving $179.2 million in potential borrowing capacity at the end of the third quarter, subject to borrowing base limitations. As at September 30, 2018, the company was in full compliance with its financial covenants. I would now like to turn the call back to Fernando to provide our outlook.
Thank you, Mike. Before I give a detailed outlook, I would like to update our view on industry fundamentals in North America. As the 2018 year enters in its last months, we remain constructive on the fundamentals for our industry. Commodity prices have continued to strengthen, and it appears today that strip pricing will generate a meaningful improvement in cash flow for our customer base, especially in the United States. As we expected, the industry has acted quickly to address the pipeline capacity issues in West Texas, with many observers now expecting those issues to be largely resolved as we enter the second half of 2019. With nearly half of U.S. land activity based in this area, any acceleration of activity in the Permian and Delaware basins should materially tighten the supply-demand balance for pressure pumping in the lower 48. In addition to this, we expect a relatively typical ramp-up of activity in 2019 as budgets reload. While we have good visibility on our fleets as they are positioned today, we are continually looking at ways to optimize our returns while partnering with the strongest list of customers possible. In Canada, our outlook is relatively subdued. We believe that in the eyes of our clients and other market participants, the risk of investing in Canada remains elevated, driven by real issues like lack of takeaway capacity and heightened regulatory burden. In addition, uncertainty as to the resolution of these issues adds unquantifiable potential risks that are further limit the attractiveness of the WCSB as a place to invest growth capital. As we move forward, we expect the money and Duvernay plays to continue to drive activity levels in Canada in 2019, although at levels largely similar to those seen in 2018. While light oil plays like the Viking and East Duvernay may attract some growth capital, we do not see the overall Canadian marketplace growing significantly in 2019 and expect clarity on programs to improve in the weeks ahead. In the longer term, the recent positive FID for an energy project in Canada reaffirms the potential of the basin, but in 2019 we do not expect any meaningful increase in demand for fracturing services as a result of the project sanctioning. Our operations in the United States did an excellent job in filling the board better than we messaged in the second quarter call. Without sacrificing our economics, we are able to secure work that largely filled two of the three spreads that were expected to see idle time during the quarter. The outlook for the company's operations in the U.S. is solid, based on our strong performance and diverse client and basin exposure. We expect 16 of our 17 fleets to remain active through much of the fourth quarter, although we don't expect to see reduced activity in December as operations slow due to the holidays and the potential for weather disruption. We expect a relatively typical ramp-up for programs in 2019, although weather issues remain at risk to utilization in the first quarter. In the longer term, we are very comfortable with the prospects of for all 17 of our fleets in the U.S. to experience good utilization through the year and believe the prospect of pumping market tightness in the second half of the year remains real. Now, I would like to discuss Caltrex international operations. In Russia, the third quarter was below our expectations, largely due to our decision to cease operations in Usinsk and a small number of client program delays. While activity today is very robust, we expect the arrival of winter conditions will curtail activity in line with past years. Revenue in Argentina was up meaningfully in the third quarter of higher activity in the Vaca Muerta shale play. Due to this higher activity level, our operation was able to deliver operating income margins over 15%, much closer to our expectations that have been delivered recently. We believe the operating model in Argentina continues to evolve towards the 24/7 model used in North America, which is critical in order to sustain and improve the results for our operation there. Finally, I would point out that yesterday, Caltrex Board of Directors approved an increase in capital spending of $13 million, bringing our 2018 budget to $168 million. The incremental funds will be used to purchase components for our operations that will largely enter service in 2019. Thank you all very much for joining us today. I will now turn the call back to Jessa for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from the line of James West from Evercore ISI. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Morning, James.
Morning, James.
Morning, James.
It's a Fernando, very impressive visibility that you guys have on your U.S. operations relative to almost everybody else we've heard some from so far this earnings season. Now, I get it that you're aligned with, you know, high-quality operators and you have strong performance, but I think there's others that could say similar things, yet they can't really speak to this the same level of visibility. What do you think is differentiating you know, Calfrac versus your peers?
Well, you know, we've been always telling you guys in the market the way that we execute our work in the field. So our job here at, you know, corporate level and also what our divisions do is basically supporting our people in the field. So we have to provide them with the tools for them to be extremely safe at a very high level of safety and executing on our quality premise. So this is what we normally call our license to operate. So, you know, being safe, being on time and doing it right, supporting the customer technology and using our, you know, supply chain network is basically what we do every day. And I think customers like it. You know, the progression that we've been facing lately, trying to associate ourselves with customers who appreciate everything that I just said, James, is what we execute on a daily basis. So, you know, and I think our people in the field feel supported. They realize that the management team is there backing them up, making sure that they have the right tools, the right equipment, the right technology, the right training, and the right support. And I think this is what customers today are starting to enjoy, this aspect of how we can sit down on the same side of the table with our customers, building their plans, helping them with our technology, and working together is what is making us execute our progression. You know, we've been coming out of this downturn that was very, very tough for a lot of companies. Some, as you know, a lot of companies disappeared. Some companies recapitalized, and other companies like us stayed standing on our two feet. And we continue that progression as we were telling you guys earlier. So I take this opportunity to thank our field people because they've been executing on the premise of our strategy in the field.
Great. And then just an unrelated follow-up for me. You mentioned, in, as you have in the past, on Argentina that it's moving towards 24/7. Do you have kind of a percentage of the fleet, maybe your assets or maybe the total fleet in Argentina that's now moved over to that level of activity?
You know, it's going slow, you know, because you have different – it's a lot of – there are a lot of dynamics happening in the market in Argentina, James.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
You have – I think you, you know, you follow closely that there are, let's say, I believe like five strong operators that are basically fighting for the resources in the country. You know, the barriers to entry are a little bit more complicated than the rest of the world because of the way that import importing equipment normally happens. I would say that the market in Argentina will be maybe at 20 to 30% 24 hours, no more than that. But customers are basically pushing hard to get into more of that. So I believe if we continue getting, the industry continues getting access to materials and accelerating some deliveries and making sure that, you know, everything related to third parties, water supplies and everything that is required to execute 24 hours is going to take maybe a couple of years to get to that level. You know, customers that we work very close with, like Total and YPF, just to give you a couple of examples, are working very hard with local industry, with third parties, and with service companies in the fracturing side to make sure that they can do more stages per day. And this is becoming a reality, but unfortunately, the logistics in the country are not really helping at the pace that our customers and ourselves would like to see.
Okay, understood, and great job, guys. Thanks.
Thank you very much, James.
Thanks, James.
Your next question comes from the line of Taylor Zurcher from Tudor Pickering Holt. Please go ahead.
Morning, Taylor.
Morning, thanks, guys. Morning, thanks. In the U.S., congrats on a great quarter there. I was curious if we could just think about the moving pieces. In Q3, you filled some white space for the two to three fleets pretty well. And so number one, if there's any way to frame what the effective utilization was for your 17 fleets in Q3, and then looking ahead, follow up to the earlier question around visibility, sounds like you think you can get all 17 fleets working by the end of January in Q1. You're curious, are any of those fleets going to be changing hands, or do you think that they're all going to stay on the other side of this transitory, you know, holiday slowdown with their existing customers today?
Yeah, Taylor, it's Scott. So I think for Q3, I won't get too far deep into it, but, you know, I think the low point we might have had in the third quarter would have been sort of 14 fleets operating, maybe 13 for a week. But I think we came back up towards that 15 and 16 number, as Fernando referenced, a little better and faster than we thought we would. So, you know, obviously revenue was up small, single digits. I think that was largely on, just utilization more than anything else. And then, you know, as we look forward, obviously the fourth quarter is, really hard to forecast, especially as you get into the holiday season. So, I really won't take a stab at it other than to say, we've got good visibility with the customers we're with today, and we'll just see how weather and programs play out as we get into December. And then again, as you look into Q1, I think weather's a risk in some of the more northern areas. But again, I think as we shift into 19, we feel that ramp up will be pretty solid. And in terms of the customer mix, we're certainly not expecting anything material from a customer shift perspective. Certainly have inbounds for customers looking for more equipment from CalFrac. And again, it's back to the old portfolio management. We have to look at the risks and the returns and try and juggle them as best we can, given the resources we have.
Okay, got it. And a follow-up also in Argentina, also a great quarter there. The 15%, maybe first, is there any way to frame, as you move to more 24/7 ops, what sort of stage count growth you got sequentially? And then moving forward, I suspect there's more juice to generate from a utilization or efficiency perspective moving forward, but do you think you can maintain that sort of 15% EBITDA margin run rate in Q4 or maybe heading into 2019?
Yeah, well, Taylor, you know, it is very difficult to give you an average stage count because we operate in every single fracturing market that is available in the country. So we have operations in conventional oil and gas. We have operations in tight oil and gas, and now, of course, in Vaca Muerta, unconventional. So it's very difficult to try to frame something like this, especially when you don't have a 24-hour operation happening everywhere. I have to tell you that as we have reported earlier in our conference calls, we went through management change in the country, and the activity has improved a little bit, but is more how our management and our team are executing today with the changes that we implemented that are helping us get to that level of efficiency that we have in the country. So I would be very careful. Of course, we would like to be 15 and more, improve our margins in the country. But I have to tell you that, as the country faces a lot of difficulties from unions and devaluation and inflation and hyperinflation and all that, you have to navigate all those things with a sophisticated management team that understands and have the experience to deal with all those things. I'm confident that the government will continue supporting our industry, and this is why we are positive about what is in front of us in the country, especially getting into 2019 with better commodity prices that are going to help the industry bring more rigs and make sure that they make, you know, they build some inventory. So fracturing will be more continuous, and it's going to provide with the number of wells and stages that we need to deliver. So in general, I have to tell you that our view in Argentina is positive. I wouldn't jump very quickly into conclusions on how fast this 24/7 is going to happen, because you have a lot of other variables to manage in that place.
Okay, fair enough. That's helpful. And I'll squeeze one more in that maybe for Mike, for the increase in the 2018 budget of $13 million. I suspect that that's going to components in the U.S., but any color around what sort of equipment you're purchasing there would be helpful.
Yeah, Taylor, I'd say that you're fairly correct in the geography. It's certainly dedicated mainly to the U.S. fleet, and it's mainly componentry of a major variety. Yep.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Meakim from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, good morning.
Morning, Sean.
Morning.
So maybe starting in the U.S., understood that December is going to be a wild card on utilization, but on price, it was interesting that, you know, your average pricing was up quarter over quarter in 3Q, certainly in contrast to your peers. And, you know, directionally, it seems like maybe you're benefiting from not having to step down as much as others that may have peaked in terms of their contracting at a bit higher of a rate. So how do we weigh those moving parts in 4Q between where your average fleet is expected to realize on price versus maybe where the spot market could be in this current quarter?
Yeah, Sean, it's Scott. I don't think we'll get too much into the weeds on pricing. You know, obviously that's a fleet and customer specific discussion. You know, certainly we're not unaware of what's going on in the spot market in the U.S., where certainly as some fleets come off programs, they might be looking for homes and may be aggressive on the spot side. That may bleed into some dedicated pricing, but, you know, I think at this point, you know, the pricing for most of our fleets, I think, is relatively steady. You know, that being said, we've referenced some sand costs that did come in the quarter, and certainly as our costs modulate, our customers are certainly going to want to have a discussion about where that leads on our pricing. But I think at this point it's really a case-by-case basis. We certainly don't see any major steps in either direction on pricing as we roll through the next couple of quarters.
And also, if I just like to add something additional, Sean, is related to the rig count remains very stable. And this is good because it's building inventory that is going to be consumed. And the customers we work for, they would like to have certainty that the companies, the service company they are operating with, that they are pleased with because of performance, are going to stick around. So, you know, it is more the longer term view that Scott was mentioning to you that we believe is basically keeping a stability in our customer base and also our prices. Of course, there are some areas, like he was commented from the sand, sand point of view, that are giving you some flexibility to lower a little bit that pressure that our customers were having. But in general, the stability is related to the way that we execute for them.
Thank you for that. Can I rephrase the thought a little bit just to get your take on? At the margin into the fourth quarter, would you characterize your strategy as being more inclined to try to fill white space if it materializes, or more inclined to sit back and protect margin where you are working?
I think I think we mentioned that in the script today. You know, we are not going to lower our prices and go into a financial situation that will jeopardize the effort that we've been doing trying to run the business in a sound way. And we prefer to run an operation that we have a stable operation. So we are not going to look to go after market share, if this is what you're asking.
Yeah, and then certainly in the fourth quarter, if you did have some gaps appear as you got into December. You're characterizing it in the right way. Not only would you think about what are the economics of doing that work, but what's the opportunity cost of maybe getting some R&M done that you wouldn't do if you went to work, of allowing people to have maybe a little bit of time off over the holidays. You know, there's lots of drivers that would go into that decision. I don't think, we certainly don't have a carte blanche edict from corporate saying, you know, we are going to fill the work in Q4 or we're not going to fill the work in Q4. It'll be very much case by case. And I think if the economics are there, as they were in Q3, you'd see us fill some space. And if the economics aren't there on a cost-benefit analysis, then, yeah, we wouldn't.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you framed it well. And I think that's the type of answer that investors want to hear. If I could, just on Canada, maybe we have a similar question but different dynamics. You know, I think there's been some conflicting commentary among the larger pumpers in that market in terms of discipline on bidding jobs near term, as well as, you know, how eager people are to contract work for early 19. Maybe just could you give us a little more of how you characterize the behavior in the market today, both in kind of, you know, near term work versus the setup for work plan in 19?
Yeah, you know, we put it in the release and we mentioned it in the script. I think we've made our position on what we think about what's happened relatively clear. I think there's been lots of ink spilt on it, so we won't necessarily pile on. I think at the end of the day, all we can control is our strategy, and that strategy remains tying up with the best customer list we possibly can. And those customers typically are defined by being value seekers rather than low-cost seekers. And then we seek out those relationships based on mutual benefit. We try and deliver the safest and most effective service we can. Those customers are very productive and try and get through things as quick as they can. And at the end of the day, there's some shared benefits. And you really, it comes down to splitting hairs at the margin of who gets how much of what. But the conversation doesn't start on pricing. It starts on what we bring to the table, what they bring to the table, and how we can make each other's lives a little better. So, as I said, we'll leave any other conversation on the Canadian pricing rationality or lack thereof. Just leave it on the side for now.
It's all fair. Thank you for the feedback.
Yep. Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Ian Gillies from GMP. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone.
Morning, Ian.
Given some of the commentary around some of the deflationary cost items such as sand in the release, I mean, do you have a positive bias to where margins could be going in 2019, given what you're seeing from your customers right now, or do you give that to your customers in an effort just to keep a steady workflow?
I think Scott was basically, in a way, answering that question in the previous comment about, you know, how much you really want to let's say to go down and go into a similar situation that the industry faced a few years ago. I think that you know, we are calling for some sort of discipline in the market. I believe that this is important if you really want to have continuity with your personnel and with the way that you execute your strategy, Ian. We would like to see our margins getting to a level of stability that will navigate through the first half of 2019, and when the market gets tighter in the second part, as we believe, especially in the U.S., have the opportunity to have some sort of margin improvement. So we would like margins not to deteriorate, and on the contrary, just to make sure that they get to a level of stability that, you know, proper planning can take place. Discussions with our suppliers, with our customers, and the rest of the people we normally deal with. It is important to just to make sure that customers understand that, because the irrational pricing behavior and also the way that the commodities evolve in our industry make it very difficult for companies to execute their businesses. Right. So we would like to see those margins stable entering 2019, and then getting into second quarter, as you normally know here in Canada, that's our breakup period, but firming up into the second part of 2019.
Okay, that's helpful. And I mean, to take a holistic view on input costs into a frac, I mean, Mike, as you look through this quarter, CapEx as a percent of revenue took another decline. Are you able to maybe provide some goalposts of what you think maintenance CapEx is at current activity levels, either as a percent of revenue or in absolute dollar terms?
Well, certainly I think in dollar terms, I think what we experienced in the third quarter is probably the run rate on a quarterly basis moving forward. So I don't think that's too far off kind of where we would get to. Might be a little bit high, just but it's around that level, between 30 and 35 million per quarter.
Okay. And just, Mike, one other quick one, a housekeeping. Can you explain the $30 million realized, I guess, Forex loss in the quarter with respect to the intercompany loans in Argentina? And I guess, do we think about that as $30 million exiting the business during the quarter?
Well, there's a lot of noise there just based on the swap out of the functional currency in Argentina. So we changed the underlying basis from the Argentinian peso to the U.S. dollar. So as a result of the prospective application of that change, there's some noise that comes through in the quarter. I think all that will normalize out going forward. So I think it's just one of those accounting adjustments that will end up clarifying itself moving forward and be a non-issue.
Oh, so was there no cash cost then?
Not really, no. There really wasn't. There was some. Obviously, there was some realized in there. But again, some of that is due to just what happens with the underlying payable balances in the country that are peso denominated. But, you know, otherwise, it just really was the application of the new accounting standard.
Okay.
Or accounting treatment, sorry.
Last one for me. You talked about the goal of getting to two to two and a half times net debt to EBITDA. I mean, if I look at trailing 12 month, I think the number is about $308 million. I mean, from your guys' perspective, would you guys consider that somewhere close to mid-cycle, or do you think it's higher? Do you think it's low? Just trying to get a goalpost or an idea of where you're trying to get to.
Like I said on the call, right, I would say consensus estimates for 18 and 19 are kind of what we consider mid-cycle EBITDA to be. So I think that's a little bit light, but it's certainly trending close to what we think mid-cycle EBITDA would be.
Okay, perfect. That's helpful. Thanks very much, guys. I'll turn it back over.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Featherly from Peters & Company. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys.
Morning, Jeff.
Just a couple follow-on clarifications. So on the CapEx side, the increase to the budget, is that pulling capital forward from what you would have spent in 2019?
Yes and no, Jeff. You know, I wanted to add a sentence to or a comment to Ian's question. Like you were saying, you know, housekeeping or cleaning. The thing here is that we've seen an increased intensity in our U.S. operations, and of course that is happening as well into our Canadian, especially when the customers get busy, the intensity increases, and we see that trend. You know, our volumes, some volumes, and a number of stages per day are basically going up in most of our geographies. So when you are doing that, if we were forecasting a capital, amount of capital to be deployed for those major components, sometimes it makes it very difficult to plan, because as intensity increases, the equipment is suffering more. So we will need this capital, part of this capital, to deploy it as we speak, but at the same time, it's going to start getting equipment ready as well for 2019. So that's what I'm saying, yes, for Q4 and also for the beginning of the year.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm sure you can appreciate that a lot of our suppliers, certainly on capital items, you're in a manufacturing queue, you've got to lock down those spots with purchase orders well in advance of actually receiving anything. And so that's part of it as well, is that you've got to manage that relationship and that flow of funds proactively.
Is it reasonable to assume that your sustaining capital or maintenance capital in 2018 is going to average about that $35 million per quarter, or will it track above that this year?
No, it's going to track above that this year, just based on, you know, the reactivation spend that we had earlier in the year. So it'll definitely be closer to, again, what we've discussed is the total capital budget for 18.
Okay. Sorry, Mike, got to ask about working capital. So the $41 million draw in Q3, largely on the receivable side, do you expect that that will come back to you in Q4?
You know, there's a lot of moving parts with working capital, as you can appreciate. But yeah, I would say the trend certainly would be a slightly softer top-line quarter. So yes, we would see that coming back into play here in the fourth quarter.
Okay. And just to follow up to the question earlier about pricing and input cost around the proppant side, as you see or realize benefit from lower proppant costs, is that sort of the mechanism that you're principally relying on in terms of mitigating pricing pressure within the market right now, or should we be thinking about those in different contexts?
No, I think the dynamics on the sand market have been well understood in the market for a few months now, so I think it's fair to say that it's not a surprise to anybody, whether you're a service company or a producer. So those conversations have largely already taken place, and I think you'd really best characterize that as a pretty holistic discussion. Obviously, your input costs are a big piece of it. If pricing gets more aggressive and you need to have something to be able to match, obviously having lower input costs gives you some cushion to do that. But, you know, I think the biggest driver of profitability, we say this all the time, is productivity and utilization. And so if it's a matter of doing work cheaper for a customer that's not productive, I think that's the worst outcome. So if you're working for a customer and can find sources of productivity, then you've got incremental cushion where the pricing per stage can move down, but your profitability as a service company can be flat to up. And I think those are the wins we try to go for, but it's never as simple as, you know, this has gone up and so the price goes up, or this has gone down so the price goes down.
And Jeff, at the same time, you know, if you compare where we are today to 2 years ago, the availability of regional or local sand mines are basically helping, you know, just optimizing this cost for our customers as well. So customers understand the availability. Some of them prefer one or the other. And at the end of the day, you end up using what the customer prefers in terms of how his well is going to be more productive or not. So, you know, and customers basically follow up on how this availability can translate into a lower cost for them. And as well, you know, that pressure is for the service companies.
Just a clarification on the international side. So the weaker than expected results in Russia, do you expect that there could be some catch up in Q4, or is it more sort of that's passed for this year and you're looking at sort of that year over year increase you mentioned for 2019?
We believe that we will see a better Q4. You know, we had, like we said, we abandoned a geographical area. We're trying to concentrate or deploy that equipment in for our customers. Is not going to be materially, let's say, better, but the trend that we are going to set up is more positive than where we were.
Yeah, and that was kind of the message. I think we've seen, you know, really good results as we exited the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter, but obviously, you know, 3 or 4 weeks does not a quarter make, and we're all aware of the onset of Siberian winter, and, you know, that may have a massive effect on the ability to the speed with which you can get things done through the fourth quarter. So I think our outlook right now is, yeah, generally a sort of seasonally in line Q4. We're certainly not seeing any speed bumps operationally, but we'll wait to see how weather plays on that. And then, yeah, 2019, it seems to be shaping up to be a return to sort of normal activity levels. But again, weather plays a big role for almost half the year in Russia.
Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the color.
Thanks, Jeff.
Your next question comes from the line of Kurt Hallett from RBC. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Kurt. First time caller. Good to hear from you, Kurt.
It's all good stuff. All good stuff. Appreciate all the color that's been provided. I did have kind of a follow up to the prior question there, as it related to to Russia in particular. You know, when you say kind of return to normalized levels, right, how should we kind of benchmark that in the context of either activity growth on a year-on-year basis or E&P spending growth on a year-on-year basis as you look, you know, again, 19 versus 18?
We are in the middle of the process now to build the work that is going to be available for us in 19 to 21. So it's just a three-year bidding exercise happening with most of our customers. So it's very difficult to tell you what we believe, but there is one thing that is certain, Kurt, and is, you know, activity levels in Russia are not going down. That basically we see the Russian oil and gas companies with a strong plans, and they want to continue pumping. And one of the articles I was reading yesterday was talking about the Russians are happy with the level of the commodity price. So we see, we believe that the volumes, as we normally treat our business in Russia, will continue at the level where, you know, traditionally they have been. And this is without counting any operations in the unconventional areas that, due to embargo, cannot be produced for Western companies. So we believe that some of the issues that affected our business in Russia, like weather, and then emerged from two big companies in the first part of the year, and also some of the relocation of our equipment, have basically affected how the first part of the year performed for Calfrac. We believe that as we move into the second and into the last part of the year, and also into 2019, we will see more stability in the way that we run our business in the country and the performance that we can generate.
All right, great. That's fantastic color. And, you know, follow-up I had, and now forgive me if this question had already been asked this morning to you, but if it has, well, I'll just follow up with you guys offline. But look, you have, what, three crews in the U.S. and the Permian. Question for you is, are you getting any indications of interest from some of your customers to potentially move a crew or two out of the Permian, you know, into some other basin?
Yeah, no, I don't think that I characterize that as the dynamic at all. I think we're very happy with the visibility we've got on the three crews in the Permian, very happy with the customers we have and the results we've gotten to date. As we get back to the full three crews working maybe a little bit late this year and into early next year, you know, the calendar looks pretty solid. And if anything, I think you'd look at what point do you consider overweighting or adding weight to your Texas exposure with five fleets today. You know, your kind of 30% of your business is Texas, where it's about 50 to 60% of activity generally. So we're certainly aware of that. But again, we're not going to chase it just because there's lots of work there. We're going to make sure it's the right customers that generate the right returns for the shareholders. And, you know, I think there's lots of customers that fit that bucket for us, but I don't think we'd be biasing towards reducing weight in Texas, in at least the way things look today.
Okay. And then maybe more broadly, right? Some of the commentary that we've heard from some of the larger oil field service companies that have frac crews operating in the U.S. You know, one of them in particular suggested that, you know, customers were looking to lay down frac crews, you know, for, I don't know, period between November and say mid January. You know, have any of your customers kind of approached you with, you know, with that kind of dynamic?
No, not really. I mean, there's probably going to be some holiday slowdowns, and it may not be a cessation of work. It may just be that the pace sort of slows down through December. And, you know, certainly you may get a week or two off, but we haven't seen sort of getting notice of 2 month shutdowns or anything like that.
We've seen customers dropping fleets, dropping competitors' fleets. That we've seen. So, you know, I just want to just to mention, as I said in the opening remarks, that our people are doing an amazing job from the execution point of view, and when a customer has five or six fleets and drops two, we prefer not to have our fleets basically being the ones dropped. So, you know, and that is happening. So the answer to your question in a way is yes. Yeah, some customers are dropping fleets, but not ours.
Got it. And then maybe one last follow-up. I think you mentioned in your press release, I think it was geared more toward Canada than the U.S., but you know, kind of broaden out the question then to incorporate the U.S. was on the frac sand front. You mentioned, you know, lower pricing for frac sand. Again, I thought that was specific reference to Canada. I think during this week we've heard others in the frac sand business talk about substantial reductions in pricing, and just want to try to gauge, you know, number one, what you're seeing, and number two, what kind of a tailwind that could be for you in the U.S. going into 19.
Yeah, we've definitely seen across North America, certainly northern white sand, pricing has come off through the third quarter and into today. In terms of where it's a tailwind, I think it's probably worth refreshing that, you know, in Canada, we manage essentially 100% of the sand we pump, and a vast majority of the work we do, we supply the sand for. So from a tailwind potential perspective, I'd say it's pretty large in Canada. In the U.S., we don't have that same footprint, so really only about half of our sand is managed internally, and probably 20 to 30% of the work we do is either no sand or customer-supplied sand. So the scale of what the tailwind could be is probably a little bit less in the U.S. from a sort of percentage term. But again, that's one of the drivers that goes into the conversation with your customers and suppliers in these relationships. And so where it all saws off is definitely to be determined. It's definitely nice to have that input cost reduction in the market we're in today, though.
Got it. All right. Hey, that's great color. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Curtin.
Thank you, Curt.
If there are any additional questions at this time, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Aaron McNeil from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, morning all.
Morning, Aaron.
Morning, Aaron.
You kind of already asked or answered the question, but I guess based on your comments on 29 U.S. Budget reloads, Permian takeaway capacity relief, and having reactivated most of your U.S. fleet, are you having any conversations with your customers today to add more equipment in 2019 to the U.S.? And would you consider moving any horsepower from Canada?
The conversations always happen, Aaron. You know, customers are really, you know, always talking about, you know, expanding their business, understanding and securing their plans for the year. And of course, I just go back to what Scott mentioned earlier, is about a portfolio allocation. We will provide our customers with the best resources that we have according to how, you know, long-term visibility and business we have in front of us. And of course, you know, we have 1.4 million horsepower in the company as we speak. The idea is to make sure that the 1.4 million are going to be assigned to the customers that are basically giving us long-term visibility, long-term, business, and maybe not only that, but securing our margins into the future, as Mike as well presented in the way that we work our balance sheet. So the conversations happen, yes, and it is a matter of understanding exactly what opportunities we have in front of us, and as a management discussion and decision to allocate those resources wherever they make the best for the company. So moving equipment from Canada to the U.S., we have done it before, moving equipment from the U.S. to Canada has always happened as well, going down to Argentina. So all the options are open according to how we can deploy our best resources.
Yeah, and Aaron, just to reiterate and emphasize, that border is definitely a two-way border. So you've seen us move coil up here. We've moved actually some sand handling equipment up to Canada because it can be better utilized here. And I think it's, as Fernando said, it's a discussion around risks and returns and who your partners are in making those decisions. It may turn out that the U.S. is a much stronger market in 2019 than Canada, and if so, we'll look at it at that point. But it may turn out that it's a bit of a head fake and Canada gets stronger in 2019, and the argument could be made that you need to add more equipment here. So I think it's a pretty complex conversation, but I certainly think we're not ruling anything out on the face of it. We have to see how the cards fall as we go through 2019.
Based on your expectations then for pricing in both Canada and the U.S., like, do you think that differential is wide enough to incent you to move horsepower to the U.S.?
You know, if everything else was equal, then, you know, and it just came down to pricing, I'm not sure you'd see it today as being wide enough to make that move, because to be quite honest, we don't see that in the broad market. We sort of pointed out pricing as being a pocketed occurrence or occurrences. We don't think, as we said, that they're reflective of market fundamentals, and as such, we think they're relatively transitory. But if that pricing discount was to persist and make itself, you know, broad across the market through 2019, and everything else in terms of risk was equal, then obviously that becomes the deciding factor. But I think it's probably a broad oversimplification to say that everything else besides price is equal between the U.S. and Canada.
Okay, fair point. Just switching gears, in your Texas operations, have you seen any material changes in the mix of sand pumped this quarter versus last, or this year versus last, in terms of in-basin versus northern white?
Yeah, well, we've definitely seen more and more brown sand coming into the basin. I think you saw some mines open through the summer and into the fall that have continued to displace the white sand out. But in Texas, you know, I think almost from day one, we had a couple of customers who were supplying sand, and they, I think, had pretty good supply from day one. So we may not have seen massive changes in our operation just because of what our revenue mix is, but definitely the basin dynamic is, you know, a pretty steady increase in the local sand contribution, you know, for the last 12 months.
It's too early to you know, to give an opinion from the customer technical point of view about the comparison that you can have between the two types of sand. So, you know, it is available, yes, and you can use any of the two because the system is basically letting us do that. But I would prefer to wait for customers to have more data points to understand exactly what is better for their wells.
Okay. That's all for me. I guess I'll turn it over. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron.
There are no further questions at this time. I turn the call back over to Mr. Aguilar for closing remarks.
Thank you, Jess. I would like to thank you all for participating in our Q3 conference call. And, you know, you are invited to participate in our next one. We're going to be closing 2018. Thank you very much and have a very good day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.